Welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from Special Olympics Delaware, we have its Executive Director of Media Relations, John Busby. And welcome back, John.
Hi, Laura. It's great to see you again.
It is. This means that the holidays are getting closer because it means the reindeer run is coming up, and we will be talking about that in just a little bit. But first, let's take care of business quickly and get into what is Special Olympics.
Well, you know, Special Olympics is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year across the world. Here in Delaware, we are celebrating our 48th anniversary, so we will celebrate our 50th in 2020. And what Special Olympics was when it originally started back in the 1960s with Eunice Kennedy Shriver is it was a sports organization made up of a couple of sports. Swimming, track and field were the two original ones, for children and adults with intellectual disabilities. And the Shrivers, a lot of people don't know that one of the Shrivers had an intellectual disability. But of course, back then, you know, it was Eunice's and John F. Kennedy's sister. Back then, you would never admit to that. And so she was put away in a home. And that was something that triggered the Shrivers to get behind people with intellectual disabilities. And so they did a lot in their political careers to support people with intellectual disabilities. And of course, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, who a lot of people said if she was a man, she would have been the president out of all the Kennedys back then. And so she took it under her wings. They were a very athletic family and decided to create Special Olympics. And so what started out as an organization for people with intellectual disabilities in two sports has grown to an organization still for people with intellectual disabilities in more than 26 sports. Here in Delaware, we offer 19 sports. We are a year-round organization. Some of the sports that we offer that people might not think about are bocce, ice skating, alpine skiing, which, yes, is downhill skiing, snowshoeing, and then there are the traditional sports, track and field, swimming, basketball. And the additional thing that Special Olympics has done as they celebrate their 50th year is they have taken it upon themselves to become the organization in the world that is going to create inclusion among everyone, regardless of ability, regardless of race, regardless of anything that goes on in their lives. Everybody is going to be inclusive in what they do, whether it's a church, an organization, a university, a business, a small company, whatever it might be. And so sports is going to be used as the foundation to create inclusion across the world through Special Olympics.
Oh, good grief. Now I have to go and parse all of that down. So let's start with 50th year, and it is an international organization, right? Where would we find this? What other countries?
More than 170 countries. In fact, next month at our fall festival at St. Andrews on November 10th, we are going to have guests from the country of Haiti who are starting a Special Olympics program over in that country. Obviously, it's a third world country. It's not the only third world country to have Special Olympics, but it's the one we're most familiar with. We have actually sent staff members and volunteers to Haiti to help them get the program started there. And now they're coming back here to actually see in person firsthand what a quality competition, what a quality event looks like, so they can try to, as close as they can, mimic that back in their own country. So that's one example. And then, of course, all the bigger countries, Spain, all the European countries, you know, all the Asian countries, they are all involved in Special Olympics. We have a world game every year. This year's World Games in March is going to be in Abu Dhabi. And so we are going to send a group from the United States over there of about 300 athletes who actually, Lar, were here at the University of Delaware just last month for their training camp. And so that was a neat thing that happened. And so all those athletes are going to go to these World Games. And so you can imagine what that experience is like for our athletes who some have never been on an airplane before. And now they're going to travel to Abu Dhabi and compete in the World Games. So it is truly an international organization for people with intellectual disabilities.
And when we talk about other countries and we talk about us in the 60s, for a lot of cultures and for us again in the 40s, 50s, 60s, et cetera, there was a stigma stigma involved in having a child who was born with intellectual disabilities or challenges? Mm-hmm. And is this something that's helping in other countries step up like it forced us to?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we hear stories all the time about how in some countries there still is that stigma, and there still is, you know, the people who shun people with intellectual disabilities, just like there's racism in other countries, you know, that we've overcome for the most part here in America. And so that Special Olympics is becoming an avenue for people to show their talents and to show their abilities, and that they can play soccer, they can play basketball, they just need to be properly trained just like anybody else. And so Special Olympics truly is becoming, sports is the foundation, but it really is training for life, and it's getting these athletes, it's getting these children and adults prepared to live everyday lives just like everybody else.
Well, what are the, what are the numbers that we're talking about? It's for Delaware right now.
Delaware, we have more than 4,200 athletes who are involved in Special Olympics. We have 150 schools that have programming of some sort through our Unified Champion Schools program. And then we have five areas. We have Wilmington area, Newark, MOT, Kent County, and Sussex County. And they're basically community programs that are run by part-time staff members and a slew of volunteer coaches who help make it go. And so we're 4,200 strong here in the state of Delaware. Worldwide, we are approaching the 5 million mark. And they hope to accomplish that this year, where we will reach 5 million people whose Special Olympics is serving, of all ages and all abilities.
Wow. Now, when we talk about a Special Olympian, is there an age limit for this? And what's the range? And then we've been talking about intellectual disabilities, and most people assume from birth. Are there others who join the Special Olympics through accident, et cetera, or illness after the fact?
Yeah, basically, to be in Special Olympics, you have to be 2 years old. We have a young athletes program for preschoolers. They don't compete. They just come out and have fun and play. And what that has become is an opportunity for parents to get together. And what they talk about while they're watching their kids play, they talk about which dentist is a good one to go to who does well with people with disabilities. Is there a physical therapist who's better than maybe somebody else or who's not as experienced with people with disabilities? So it's become an outreach opportunity for our parents to learn more about how they can best get services for their own children. And then we have adults who are in their 80s, and maybe some, I'm sure, around the world who are in their 90s, and they compete in Special Olympics. For a lot of our adults, Special Olympics is their social life. And they'll tell you, why do you compete in Special Olympics? And they say, because it's fun, because I want to make friends. And the reality of it is, that's why all of us compete in sports once we're out of high school and out of college, is because we want to have fun. My sons play the sports they play because it's fun. They love the sports, but it's fun for them. If it's not fun, all of a sudden they want to find something else to do. So all age groups, and yes, including some people, many who are born with an intellectual disability, but we do have several people who, because of an accident or whatever, they become disabled mentally in some way, and that makes them eligible for Special Olympics.
Are these all intellectual disabilities? Are there any physical disabilities that are allowed to play in Special Olympics as well?
As long as they have an intellectual disability, we do have about 10% of our population are people who are use wheelchairs or walkers of some sort, but they also have an intellectual disability. So in other words, if your only disability is that you have no use of your legs, you would join the Paralympics, not Special Olympics.
Okay, so birth injuries, et cetera, or maybe a child in a wheelchair with, cerebral palsy, et cetera, they would be able to play in Special Olympics.
Yeah, as long as, again, and kind of the rule that we use, and it's not a hard and fast rule for people who are in school, is that if you have an IEP, then you are eligible for Special Olympics, other than speech therapy. And so if speech therapy is your only IEP, then you would be a unified partner, which is someone who in Special Olympics who does not have a disability.
Do you teach the skills as they go along? I mean, does somebody become proficient at their sport?
Yeah, what we try to do is we try to develop athletes in the sports that they will eventually do, even when they're as young as 2, 3, 4, and 5. And by what I mean by that is, at our young athletes' practices, they'll do fun things like have juggling scarves and play with a parachute and jump rope and things like that. But they're also dribbling a basketball, or they're running on a track, or they're doing things that eventually will become sports-oriented for them. And then as they get older, we do truly try to develop sports. We offer something for every ability level. So in other words, we'll use basketball as an example. We have basketball teams that play full court that could play with a lot of the recreational teams in the area. But we also offer a skills competition. And the skills competition is for somebody who's not yet ready to play on a team, because they don't have either the mental capacity to understand offense and defense, or in some cases they don't have the physical capability to keep up with a full court game. So we always say we offer 19 sports, and within those 19 sports, it doesn't matter how good you are, we have something that will make you happy and make you a better person and a better athlete.
Are the sports modified for the participants?
We do modify them. There are certain rules that we modify depending on what the sport is. But then, by and large, for most of the sports, we do follow what I always say is high school rules. So in other words, if you're in the pool and you're swimming the butterfly event and you don't swim the stroke correctly, you get disqualified. And so we do that because Eunice Kennedy Shriver believed that people with intellectual disabilities can learn the correct way to do something if they're taught how to do it. And they should be expected then to follow through and do it correctly, because it's not fair for the person who's swimming the butterfly if the person in the lane next to them breaks out into the freestyle, because the person who's swimming the freestyle is going to win the race. And so that's not fair. And our athletes need to be taught that when there are rules in place, you're expected to follow them. Having an intellectual disability is not an excuse to not follow the rules. And that all goes back to the foundation of sports.
It sounds more competitive than most little,
kids' leagues. It is competitive, and it is a true sports organization. And that's a stigma that we fought. You know, I've been with Special Olympics Delaware for 30 years. When I got here, we didn't follow the rules here in Delaware. You just went out and played, and it didn't matter how you played or what the rules were, and you didn't follow them. And we made that change. And the change was, and that wasn't going on just here in Delaware. It was going on all over the country. And we as a group, as a country, decided we needed to make that change, because we needed to do away with the stigma that people with intellectual disabilities can't learn. And if you don't make them follow the rules, that's the message that you're sending. And so we did that, and we did that very successfully.
And this is, of course, a real competition, and they are in it, you can tell I have no sports background here. Okay, so work with me on
sure
this.
Sure thing. That's why I'm here.
So you start out at like the beginner league, mm-hmm. and then you actually are playing in brackets.
Divisions, tournaments.
Divisions, yep. Thank you. Divisions and tournaments, mm-hmm. et cetera. I mean, so this is a true competition, and how do you break them down?
Well, what's neat is that what Special Olympics does, and I've always thought, and I'm really involved in youth sports here in the community, both as a coach and administrator and other ways, but I always thought sports in general, youth sports, should follow the Special Olympics movement. And what we do in Special Olympics is, if we have 10 soccer teams, and let's say all 10 soccer teams are elementary school age teams, we break them up into ability levels. So in other words, if you have the number 10 team is the best team, they shouldn't be playing the number one team, because that's two completely different teams and it's not fair, and you're not going to get fair competition. We see that at high school all the time. You see blowouts. What we do in Special Olympics is we do everything we can to prevent blowouts. And what we do by doing that, Laura, is the kids have a better competition, and I shouldn't just say kids, we do it for our adult teams too. They have a better competition, which makes it more fun for them, which is going to bring them back to continue to be part of the organization, part of the sport. And by coming back, they have to stay healthy, they have to stay in shape, they have to eat well. And so it all goes back to that healthy lifestyle. We use sports as a way to train for life, because kids who are happy and healthy and in shape are more productive in school, and our adults are more productive in the work community.
I was going to ask, well, what are the benefits? Because I always wonder, well, what are the benefits of Little League? Mm-hmm. So the benefits are discipline and a healthy lifestyle and team, etc.
And self-confidence is a huge one for our athletes. My favorite story is a gentleman who was in Special Olympics he was a student at Polytech, and he became a runner with Special Olympics because he didn't have the confidence to be on his high school team. And so he came to Special Olympics. He was eligible because he had a IEP at Polytech High School. He became a runner with us. He ran marathons. He went to our World Games and won gold medals. And the confidence that Special Olympics gave him allowed him to go to college, and he is now a professor in West Virginia. So he went from a shy, introverted child who had no confidence in himself because he struggled in school, and he used sports through Special Olympics to prove to himself that with hard work, he could overcome anything. He became a world champion runner in Special Olympics, and like I said, he's now married with a family, and he has a doctorate, and he's a professor down in West Virginia. It's one of my favorite all-time stories.
Oh, you can't beat that. So let's just say this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, John Busby, who is the Director of Media Relations for Special Olympics Delaware. And if you'd like to learn more information about what we're talking about today, and of course about the upcoming Reindeer Run, go to SODE.org. That's Special Olympics Delaware, SODE.org. And everything we talk about is going to be on your fabulous website.
Somewhere, fact sheets and all that other stuff.
everything will be there. And so, and of course, I do need to say that the Reindeer Run of Romp is coming up on November the 20th, and we'll be talking about that in just a few minutes, because obviously you got to pay the bills for all of this great stuff.
November 30th.
Oh, so, I can't read.
Nope, that's all right. November 30th.
I got to start writing bigger notes.
We need that extra 10 days.
Well, I got to start writing bigger notes. So November 30th, but of course, that's on the website, and you're going to go there to find that information. Now, we keep talking about the coaches, and we talk about the volunteers, et cetera. Does it take a different kind of coach or a different kind of volunteer to work with a sportsman in Special Olympics?
You know, what it takes is somebody who wants to make a difference. It takes somebody who wants to know that they're going to come into a situation. And it's no different than if I coach a T-ball team. I'm going to have 10 kids on that T-ball team. I'm going to have 10 different personalities. I'm going to have 10 different parents who think their kids should be coached 10 different ways. And I just have to realize that it's part of my job as a coach to figure out how to make that successful. And it doesn't matter what age our Special Olympics athletes are. It doesn't matter what ability they are. It doesn't matter their sport. That is the general focus that somebody who comes into our organization has to have, is that, hey, I've got to come in this with my eyes wide open and figure out how to make a difference in the lives of these children and adults who I'm making a difference with. Now, that being said, our ideal coach in Special Olympics, no matter what the sport is somebody who has at least played the game before at some level, so understands the game. Now, granted, some sports are easier to coach with no experience than others. Bocce, bowling, you can learn a couple techniques and make a difference. If you're coaching a full court basketball team, you need to come in with a little bit of experience, either as a player or as a coach. We also offer training to all of our volunteers, and that training can be as simple as our Coaching 101 course, which is how to organize a good practice, all the way up to our sport-specific advanced courses where we're teaching our coaches how to teach a full court press and how to break a full court press in the sport of basketball, in swimming, how to swim a butterfly, how to have a diving start, how to do a flip turn. And so again, going back to that, every sport offers something for all ability levels. We need coaches in each of our sports who can coach at all different ability levels, because every coach is different.
And now, does this follow the regular season as far as kids are playing baseball in the spring and summer, people are bowling in the winter, et cetera?
Well, you know, to answer your question, yes and no. Some of our sports do exactly coincide with what traditional sports seasons are. Nowadays, there are no, you know, basketball is played year-round. You know, all these sports
are. So is ice hockey, apparently.
So is ice hockey.
Football starts.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. But our basketball season is during the winter, like a traditional basketball season. Our soccer season is in the fall, like a traditional soccer season used to be. Now it's in the spring as well. And so, to answer your question, really, yes and no. There's no hard and fast rule about whether we line up with a specific season. And sometimes it's to our advantage not to offer the sport during the season. Swimming's a great example. The traditional sport season for swimming is winter. And so the pools are packed. It's hard to get a pool. It's hard to get a lane in a pool at a decent time. So we bumped our swim season to the spring. So in other words, pools are available at normal, decent times. You don't have to swim at 10 o'clock at night in order to get a pool. And so that's a case where we've intentionally avoided the traditional season so that we have an opportunity to have better facilities for our athletes.
So you have a small part-time staff, and then it's volunteer coaches and real coaches who get out there. Do they pretty much put in the same hours that any other youth coach would do?
Pretty typically, our teams practice once or twice a week for a couple hours each time. The difference between what we do and what, like, my kids do when they play travel soccer or they play CYM basketball is our athletes compete twice in a season. We have a mid-season tournament, and then they have their championships at the end. And that's happened for a variety of reasons, but that's the one thing that we wish we could do more of is more competitions. But in order to do more competitions, you need to have more volunteers willing to give more of their time. You need to require more parents getting their kids to places and the group homes, getting the athletes to more practices. And it's the same all over the country. Most Special Olympics teams practice once or twice a week, and they compete two or three times a year, whereas my son, who's playing travel soccer, practices three nights a week and has already played 15 games, and we're only halfway through the season. So that's the big difference. There's pros and cons to both.
Ouch. You have my sympathy. You mentioned inclusion. Mm-hmm. When you talk about inclusion, what is that? Is it playing with regular teams or other youth groups, or having adults and parents play together, et cetera?
Yes, to answer all your questions. Here's the greatest example that I've heard, and I wish I could remember the guy's name who was quoted as saying this, that acceptance, which is a word you hear often, is inviting somebody to a dance. Inclusion is asking them to dance. And that is the difference. And so if you want to relate that to a sport, you know, it's one thing if you invite somebody to come along and come watch our team play at recess. Hey, why don't you sit down and watch us play kickball? Inclusion is asking that child with Down syndrome to be part of the kickball game. And that's what Special Olympics is trying to use sports as a platform for inclusion in society in general. But we feel that because sports can be, while it can be often very intimidating, in the right situation, in the right setting, with the right athletes and the right unified partners and the right teachers and coaches, it should be a very welcoming environment for everybody to take part in.
You mentioned earlier that this gives self-confidence and it gives someone discipline and all the benefits to that. If there were no Special Olympics, what would the situation be?
Well, you know, I think in this,
and for us too, for everyone.
Sure. In this day and age, I think other people would find other ways to develop those things. You know, Special Olympics has only been around for 50 years. And so, you know, there's a whole generation before that.
Who did nothing.
Who did nothing. Right. And so, you know, it's hard to say what ifs, you know, what if there wasn't, because it's like saying, well, what if we didn't have cell phones? Well, that's not going to happen. That's the reality of it. But, you know, I think, again, what Special Olympics has provided is opportunities, and it's provided opportunities that weren't there before. And so a perfect example is, you know, a lot of companies now are hiring people with intellectual disabilities. And my guess is, even without Special Olympics, that would still be happening in this day and age. But certainly I can't help but think Special Olympics hasn't had something to do with that, and having something to do with getting people with intellectual disabilities out into the community, into the business world. It's just the reality of where the world we live in today, and it's, you know, it's a good thing about the world we live in today.
Well, we know that you need volunteers, and we know that you need cash, and an easy, great way to get involved with Special Olympics Delaware is to join them for the 5K Reindeer Run and Romp on November 30th. I wrote it big. So tell us about the Reindeer Run and Romp.
Yeah, it's a great event. It's going to be in the 13th year that we've been doing this. It's on the University of Delaware campus. Those who are familiar with the Aetna Fire Company on Academy Street, that's where it starts and where it finishes. And it's an opportunity. We've always had more than 1,000 people. It's a nighttime race, which is something that is very rare this day and age. So instead of being at 7 a.m. when you start, it's 7 p.m. And it is cold and brisk. Typically, it's a winter race, basically. It coincides with the Winterfest that the city of Newark puts on. So there's a lot of activity going on in that area to begin with, which is a highlight for people who come, especially with families. And we have very serious runners who do this race, and it is a chip time race. And we have some people that just come out and walk. And it's about half and half. So if we have 1,000 people come out, half of them will be runners. The other half will be walkers just supporting the organization. They walk through the campus or run through the campus, and then they go down on the James F. Hall Trail, which is the trail that runs parallel to the railroad tracks. And there we have luminary lit candles. We have entertainment. We have choirs. We have bands. And so it really is a festive atmosphere. It's $25 like typical races to be part of it. People can go to our website, sode.org. There's a Reindeer Run banner on the front page. They can click on that. We have online registration. We also have a print form. And so it really is a great way to ring in the holiday season. Like I said, a lot of families come out to this because what they do is they do the run or they walk, and then they head to Main Street. And whether they're getting pizza somewhere or ice cream or something else, they turn it into a family night.
And of course, Winterfest is going on as well.
Yep. So there's Santa's there.
All the activities that you could want. Now, do people dress up for this?
They do. Actually, it's funny. In fact, you know, I was looking at some pictures today, actually, as I was preparing some other things for the event. And we have a lot of Santa Clauses. We have reindeer. We have all kinds of things that you can imagine that people dress up for, and they make it fun. We sell reindeer noses that people get. We give out jingle bells. So there's a lot of jingling going on when the runners run past. And we try to make it as festive as we can. We have blow-ups along the route, you know, that people would have on their front yard type of thing. And so we really have tried to make it a family-friendly event, because we realize on a Friday night at 7 o'clock, if I'm heading there, my wife and kids want to go with me. And so it's something that it's got to be that interests everybody. In fact, if you bring your kids, and this is something we make clear, they can actually do the walk for free. They just don't get the amenities. So in other words, you're not going to get the t-shirt and the goodie bags, but you can still walk with your parents. So it doesn't have to cost a family of four $100.
Yeah. But now you just mentioned the goodie bag, and you mentioned the amenities. So when you register for $25, you get a t-shirt.
You get a really nice long sleeve t-shirt. It's a great, we've been told it's a great giveaway for a race.
Yeah.
That you get in the winter, so you can wear it right away. It's not something you got to wait for the weather to turn. And a lot of the merchants on Main Street give out coupons, and so you get those in your bag. And so even if you don't want to go use them that night, it's something that you can use for months afterwards. So a lot of perks to it as well. But, you know, the biggest thing is you're making a difference for the 4,200 athletes here in Delaware. Every single dime raised from that. And we'll surpass the $500,000 mark for this event this year, which is our 13th. And every dime stays right here in Delaware.
And we can form teams, et cetera. And then obviously it's $25 to participate and get your gift bag. But you can raise far more money if you would like.
Absolutely.
And that's the idea.
Yep, absolutely. We have a lot of people that do that they, you know, they try to get sponsors for their own event, and the more money they raise, the better. But it's something that we just appreciate. Anything anybody can do is great.
You do you do have the medals and all that other stuff for everybody.
Yep, the typical age groups and all that, and that's all on the website. People can see first place, top three finishers overall, male and female, first place for the masters, male and female, and then category age group prizes as well.
So again, that is the 13th annual 5K Reindeer Run and Romp, and it will take place the night of Winterfest there in Newark, and it's a 5K. It is time chipped if you're a serious runner. Kids can walk the course for free, or I guess they could trot along too.
Sure.
They beat me, that's for sure. Someone have to be chasing me to get me to run that fast. But it's cold. It's going to be cool nights. It'll be fun to run around that night. And you then at the end, you get all the fun of Santa and the tree lighting and the ice carving and all the other things that are going on with Winterfest. And it's easy. $25 gets you a registration there, and you can do that at their website, www.sode.org. That's Special Olympics Delaware, SODE.org. And of course, when we are there, we also can find out criteria for getting involved as a volunteer, find out about getting my family or business possibly involved in working with you. All of that is there on your website.
It sure is. SOD.org is a blue volunteer button. If people want information about that, there's a red donate button at the top as well if they can't make it to the run, but they still want to make a difference. So lots of ways to give back, whether it's your time, your talents, or your treasures, we always say.
And of course, that is SODE.org. org. And that's also where you can find out if you've got a son or a daughter or a brother or someone who wants to participate in the sports. They can get involved through the website as well.
Yep, absolutely. We have people that we have somebody that their full-time job is making sure that families who want to get their children involved in Special Olympics, or whether it's a brother or an aunt or an uncle, that we make sure that that happens.
And of course, that is all at SODE.org. If you are just joining us, you want to hear this in its entirety, you can find a podcast of this show at Mix995WJBR.com. So this is where we throw you out and say we'll see you on November 30th.
I can't wait. It's going to be cold. The WJBR van will be there as well because you're the official radio sponsor of the event. We appreciate that and look forward to having you involved. I believe it'll be the third consecutive year.
Oh, it's gonna be a blast. And again, that's November 30th, SODE.org, to find out all the information. My guest today, John Busby, who is the Director of Media Relations for Special Olympics Delaware. Thanks for coming in. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.